Welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour, where we bring you information about Minnesota's National Guard, military community, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Program, and Department of Veteran Affairs. Your host is Tom Lyons, the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force and a member of the VFW and American Legion. Now the host of Minnesota Military Radio Hour, Tom Lyons.
Welcome to this special edition of the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. It's our first anniversary on the air. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we have a special guest. Retired Brigadier General Joseph Kelly is here to help us commemorate our first anniversary of the show. Welcome to the show, sir.
Thanks, Tom. It's great to be back. I appreciate the opportunity. I truly enjoyed the Memorial Day program that we did earlier in the year. So thank you and congratulations on a great year with this new program.
Thank you, sir. We're going to take a look at our first year, and later we're going to tell you about some upcoming shows that should make year number two very special. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
Congratulations to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on your one-year anniversary. I want to thank the staff of News Talk AM 1130, Tom Lyons, and the soldiers of the Minnesota National Guard who work tirelessly every week to produce this radio program. This radio hour is one-of-a-kind program aimed at informing Minnesotans about programs and initiatives that are taking place in the Department of Defense, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and the Minnesota National Guard. It is critical that the public knows what the military is doing on their behalf, and that's why the Minnesota Military Radio Hour is so unique. Radio programs like this are so important to the public debate. When citizens can tune in or avail themselves of the information via podcasts, they are better able to make an informed decision. I salute Mr. Lyons for his work in bringing these important issues to the public's attention. Tom has served his country faithfully in uniform, and he does so once again by providing this great public service.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. General Kelly, it's hard to believe that we've done a year's worth of shows already, and it just seems like it was yesterday that you were on for a few hours live on Memorial Day. We had a lot of fun that morning.
We had a lot of fun that morning, Tom, and I guess it goes back to the time flies when you're having fun and working hard and doing good work.
General, I just wanted to go back and review some of the folks that we've talked to during the first year, and we've got some clips from some of those shows. And the first one I want to start out with was from one of our first shows. We talked to Chief Warrant Officer Trigvi Skor, who's the commander of the 34th Infantry Red Bull Band. And it was an interesting conversation because when he came on, they had just returned from deployment in 2009 and 10. And I had the question, why would you take a band to war? And here's what he had to say.
We identified that we wanted to connect with the Iraqi people in a special way. At these ceremonies, there was often a counterpart of General Nash or whoever the leader was of the ceremony. And when you make an effort to connect with people as with music as an international language, you know, what better way to do it when we're in Iraq to help build nationalism is to perform their anthem and do it in their language. And we had some very talented vocalists.
General, as part of that interview, which listeners can find by going to MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com/search, Chief Warrant Officer Skor was telling us that they went on 450 missions, traveled over 70,000 miles, and it must be very valuable for the commanding general to be able to have his band play the Iraqi national anthem when they open up any kind of ceremonies with the Iraqi military.
Well, I think that's absolutely the case, Tom. And I remember the discussion when we were building the deployment package, if you will, for the 34th Division, whether the band should go along. And it kind of came down to, you know, who knows what you're getting into. You can't have too many soldiers. You're never going to know what you're going to need to do. And it turned out that cultural interaction, that socializing with our Iraqi partners was important. And things like music have a special way of bringing people together. So I think it showed a lot of respect and sensitivity on the part of our soldiers to have the band there and be able to play their anthem. And it also demonstrates the real depth of talent and skills that our citizen soldiers bring to the fight.
And even though they're band members, they're soldiers first, aren't they?
They are absolutely soldiers first. And I tell you, I'm sure over the course of that year, those band members did a lot of other soldierly things than just do band concerts. Absolutely.
And General, on that deployment in 09 and 10, it was, one of the longest deployments. And it was long because our soldiers had to go and train away from home for a few months before they went on that deployment. And we talked to Colonel St. Salver, who's the commander at Camp Ripley, about that very topic, and here's what he had to say.
We are very, very proud that we are a pre-mobilization asset to the soldiers and airmen of the Minnesota Guard. And not only the Minnesota Guard, but just recently, in the last year, we also handled a lot of the pre-deployment training for the Iowa National Guard. So just in the last year, for example, we have been preparing the 1st Brigade Combat Team, which is currently on base, getting ready for their second deployment as a large organization. And last year we did some pre-mobilization training for them, as well as the 2nd Brigade Combat Team of the 34th Division out of the state of Iowa. And they are currently deployed to Afghanistan. So we're very proud of our ability to do that pre-mobilization training to cut down that time that they spend post-mobilization to maximize that soldier's training ability closer to home.
General Kelly, we've learned over the course of the last year that we've got a wonderful state asset in Camp Ripley up in northern Minnesota, 53,000 acres. And the Minnesota National Guard has invested a lot of money in that in the last few years. And as a result, we can do most of our training close to home at Camp Ripley. How important is that to your soldiers and airmen?
Well, it's critically important, Tom. And I think that is one of the best developments that's come about over the last 10 years of these operations in Iraq, Afghanistan, and other places, is that we've grown and we've matured so that there's an element of trust now throughout the Army that we can keep our soldiers at home, we can keep them closer to their families, we can keep them on the job longer while still training them to the highest standards. When you got a gem like Camp Ripley, where there is just everything that a commander could possibly need to train his soldiers to get them ready to go overseas, it just makes sense to take advantage of it. When the 1st of 34th Brigade Combat Team deployed the first time, they spent somewhere between 5 and 6 months, depending on the individuals, down at Camp Shelby, Mississippi, training away from home, away from their families, but before they ever went overseas. And that deployment ended up being the longest one of the Iraq War. So it is a wonderful development and a good thing that we can keep them here at home.
We're speaking with the retired Brigadier General Joe Kelly on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on the anniversary of our 1 year anniversary of our show. General Kelly, we also had several conversations with Colonel Kurska, who is the commander of the 1st Brigade Combat Team that's currently in Kuwait, and he had some interesting thoughts about training and what was going on before they left.
I like to think we're breaking all the records, and in some cases we have. We were received very well. We showed up at a higher than normal readiness rate, maybe because we had a little bit extra notice and we worked hard the previous winter, as well as Camp Ripley when I saw you last. So we had 98% of our pre-mobilization tasks complete when we showed up here. We went through extensive machine gun gunnery training. We set very high goals for that. I've been doing machine gun crew qualification for about 25 years now. And in that time, I never saw a perfect 1,000-point score in the last 25 years. I'm sure there's been a few out there, but it's a pretty rare thing. Well, this brigade, we ended up getting 5 of those perfect scores. So I couldn't be more proud of the guys and gals with the machine gun scores.
The mission is a security mission. Our job is to get the remaining soldiers and equipment out of Iraq. So we get the honor of potentially, probably turning the lights off. And I'm all for that.
General, those were clips from several conversations with an old friend of yours, Colonel Eric Kurska. He's pretty proud of his readiness and his training and that machine gun effort that his soldiers put in.
Well, I've known Eric Kurska for many, many years, and he is he's a great friend and a tremendous soldier and one of our best leaders. And Eric and I served together 10 or 15 years ago in a tank battalion. He was my operations officer. And if there was one thing that he always emphasized, it was weapon skills, particularly machine guns, because they're a little more intricate to operate and maintain. So he takes that very seriously. He believes if you're gonna go to a gunfight, you better know how to shoot straight. And he always put a lot of effort into that. So I can only imagine how proud he is and how comfortable he is that his soldiers were well prepared when they went overseas because of the training that they had there. As an Iraq vet, it's very satisfying to hear my friend and his compliment of Minnesota soldiers be in the position that they're going to be, as Eric said, quote, be able to hopefully turn the lights off, because it's been a long and challenging mission, and I think we're at that point.
General, we want to get one last clip in here before we go to a break, and there was a recent deployment to Afghanistan by Colonel Allness with the 135th Agribusiness Development Team, and here's what he had to say.
As we go out and work with the Afghan individuals and farmers, it's very important for us to get down to local communities and help each community come up with a viable economic model so that they can sustain their business models and feed their people. One of the problems we have right now is from about January until about mid-March, they have a period of food insecurity where they're not even sure if they're going to have enough food to feed themselves. So if we can help build a stronger model where they get a solid food supply and know they can feed their families, that helps them have greater confidence in their government, and then thus they're more supportive of their government rather than the Taliban.
General, it's probably not readily known that the Minnesota National Guard can call on their citizen soldiers and put together a specialized team, like an agribusiness team, to go to Afghanistan and help those folks learn how to do a better job of growing food.
Well, I think this is a classic example of the citizen soldier competency that our National Guardsmen and women bring to these operations. None of these people have a specialty in the military involving agriculture, but in their civilian careers, they're farmers, they're scientists, they're biologists, and they're going to bring those skills over there and help the Afghan people build a sustainable agricultural system so they can bring their country forward.
Just another great example of the things that citizen soldiers can do that maybe the full-time active duty can't.
Well said.
General, we have to take a short break. When we come back, we'll play some clips from some historical figures that we've interviewed over the course of the first year. This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130. Please stay with us. Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. Today, we've got a special show. We're taking a look back at our first year, and I'm joined by retired Brigadier General Joe Kelly. General Kelly, the first clip, we're going to do some history on this segment, and there are a lot of folks that we talked to during the course of the first year, but one of them was a gentleman by the name of Harold Curvers, and Mr. Curvers was in the Army when the war started, and he was from the Northern Minnesota, the Minnesota National Guard unit.
It was stationed 194th Cavalry.
The 194th Cav, stationed in the Philippines. Early in the war, and we found out, I didn't realize that when the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor, they also attacked the Philippines.
Mm-hmm.
And over the next few months, they drove our military and the Philippines back into the Bataan Peninsula. And on the dawn of 9th of April, 1942, 75,000 American and Filipino prisoners surrendered. And that came to what we call the Bataan Death March, which unfortunately a lot of young people maybe don't remember, but Mr. Curvers survived the death march and 5 years of captivity, and here's some things he had to tell us.
I saw bodies. I never once saw shooting or bayoneting, but I saw the bodies there that had been. We were about the first ones out of the batons, so that we didn't have the chance to see what was happening to the rest of them that followed us.
And you were headed for which camp?
O'Donnell was the name of the first camp. Capus was the name of the town. And then we went to, I was there maybe 4, 5, 6. Time, you don't
gets
remember half
it.
The things. Then they were taken to O'Donnell.
And how were the conditions there?
Oh, it was terrible. They had 40, 50 bodies out there every day. I mean, it's Americans.
The Americans that died each day.
And you know what was strange about that? I used to go out and see if any of them from our outfit that I might know. And I don't know what it was, and I didn't think of it till years later. I noticed that there was a lot of them were redheads that were lying there. Say there's 40 bodies out there. It seemed like about 20 of them or so would be either blondes or redheads. It seems like that complexion couldn't take that temperature, that heat or whatever. To people who believe in God, pray for peace.
General, he told us firsthand the story of 75,000 troops, American Filipinos, that surrendered, and historians think about 54,000 of them survived the 60-mile trek. And what we don't realize is they were beat up and starving to death and worn out before that even started. But what a terrible tragedy that was, and it was fascinating talking to Mr. Kerbers.
I'm sure it was, Tom, and it's a little tough to listen to, but it's a good reminder to all of us that that war is a very hard and brutal business, and we need to keep that in mind because we need to know what we're getting into, and we need to always do our best to take care of those who bear those burdens. I think it was Douglas MacArthur, General MacArthur, at one point said that above all, soldiers are the ones that pray for peace. Because they're the ones that have to bear the burdens, they're the ones that have to carry the load, they're the ones that have to make those sacrifices. And you heard Mr. Kerver say that at the end. If you
pray
believe in
peace.
God, pray for peace. The soldiers are the first ones in line to pray for peace.
General, we also had the pleasure of talking to Lieutenant Colonel Hiram Mann, who is one of the original Tuskegee Airmen. And I believe he could probably still fly one of those Red Tails today. And here's what he had to say.
Prior to World War II, Negroes were not, I'll use Negro because I like that better than the others. Negroes were not permitted to get into the Army Air Corps, but it took me 3 attempts to get into the flying training program. I wanted to fly for my country. This is my country too. And I wanted to do what I could to keep the Nazis away from the shores of America. I had a wife, a mother, and a grandmother, and I did not want the Nazis coming to the United States of America and committing the atrocities on the females in America that they were committing on the females in Europe.
General Colonel Mann wrote a book called Tuskegee Airmen Fighter Pilot, the story of an original Tuskegee pilot, and he points out that the Red Tails never lost escorted bombers during World War II. And as he pointed out in his comments, it was a world war and all Americans were fighting, weren't they?
Yes, they certainly were. And I've had the great privilege of meeting Colonel Mann, and I agree with you. I think Hiram could still take a crack at flying one of those airplanes. You know, there's a couple things they think of, but the primary one hearing him talk was his emphasis on his country and how he wanted to protect everything that was here and that he held near and dear. It's been said that soldiers, American soldiers, don't fight because they hate what's in front of them, but rather they fight hard to protect what's behind them. And I think you could clearly hear that in Colonel Mann's voice.
This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130. It's our one-year anniversary, and I've been joined today by Brigadier General Joseph Kelly. General, our next cut comes from a gentleman named Larry Tillmans, who was a World War II veteran and a typist in Patton's Third Army. And he got to see Dachau firsthand. And, of course, he was involved doing some typing and so forth in the Nuremberg War Trials. And he had some fascinating things to tell us.
10,700,000 men, women, and children were put to death in here. And these are the guys that saying they were just obeying orders. Yeah, it was an eerie feeling, one that I saw, and I feel it has to be repeated and repeated and repeated, just like Eisenhower told the soldiers, get it all out now, because somewhere down the line somebody's going to say it's nothing, never happened, and that some people are believing that today. Good people have to stand up, just like that saying says, that it was Holocaust was evil, and evil will triumph when good men say nothing.
General, Mr. Tillmans made a couple of good points, but I think it was interesting that General Eisenhower had the foresight to know that at some point in the future, someone was going to deny the Holocaust even happened.
One of the things that I, in my experience, I think our service members sometimes fail to appreciate at the moment that they are part of history and that they are making history. And as Eisenhower reminded them, you know, you have a role to play here in how the world after this conflict turns out. So be good witnesses, you know, see what you see, remember it, write it down, take pictures, because you truly are part of history. And that certainly is the case with our soldiers today.
In general, as a career military man and a good American, Mr. Tillman's pointed out that the Holocaust was evil and that all that evil needs to triumph is for good men to stand by and do nothing.
Well, that's right, Tom. And unfortunately, the challenge we face today is there's no shortage of evil. Just like back then, there are bad people in this world doing bad things, and it certainly is in the hearts and souls of everybody in uniform that they need to be the ones that will stand up in the face of evil. But I think it's even a little bigger than that. I think that's also what our country does. We can get into these debates about whether we should get involved here or get involved there. And as we have those discussions, I think we should keep in mind that it's awful hard for Americans to turn away from that fundamental value of stepping in and doing something when they see evil.
And one of the big philosophies of as a military man, it's something I'm sure that you believed in your whole career.
Absolutely. That's at the heart and soul of it all when you swear to defend the Constitution.
General, we've got to take another short break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some clips we have involving the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs and some interesting people we talked to there. This is our anniversary edition of the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130. Please stay with us. Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and I'm here with retired Brigadier General Joseph Kelly, and we're reviewing the first year of this program on the air. In general, we've had some pretty good clips from our military today and some historical things, and now we're going to dive into some veterans benefit issues. And on one of our shows, we had Andre Sanchez on from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs to explain to us what presumptive disorders and diseases were.
A presumptive condition is something that the Veterans Administration has assigned to a specific theater of operation. So in this case, Vietnam, because folks were exposed to Agent Orange because they were operators in that area, now after the fact, a good number of veterans have suffered from the same conditions which have been linked to Agent Orange. So the VA or Veterans Administration presumes that those conditions are related to exposure to Agent Orange. There are presumptive conditions of the Gulf War as well, such as short-term memory loss, irritable bowel syndrome, other things that are, and there's another list that exists for those as well. There are also conditions presumed just of military service, like Lou Gehrig's disease or ALS, that is just presumptive of a person being in service. Therefore, at any time, if they get a diagnosis of that condition, it is automatically going to be presumed that that's due to their military service, whether they were peacetime or whether they served in a combat theater.
General Kelly, for hundreds of years, we've sent our young men and women off to fight wars and do our bidding around the world, and we're still doing it. And it's interesting to note that the VA has studied where they've gone and the conditions and some of the things that happen to our young troops or older troops whenever they're deployed around the world. It's kind of a fascinating discussion, isn't it?
It really is. I don't know if I've ever heard the term presumptive condition before, but I was really heartened to hear it, because when we get into these things sometimes and use weapons or get exposed to conditions, we don't know what we know at the time. And I think it's very important, particularly for Veterans Administration, to be skeptical. And by that, I mean to be curious and be interested and listen to our servicemen and women when they describe their conditions. Our young men and women go to war trusting that our country is going to do right by them. And regardless of what they run into and what the complications might be afterwards that are discovered after the fact, they trust that our country is going to do right by them. And our country has an obligation to take care of them.
And the VA system's doing a remarkable job of keeping up with it and reacting to what's happening and their research and their ability to take care of our troops is better than ever.
It really is, and they really are doing a tremendous job. I think they're probably one of the great untold stories in the whole system that we have.
In general, in Minneapolis, we have one of the better VA hospitals in the country. And out there, there's a house called the Fisher House. And we had on the house manager, Marge Oslin, and she told us these things about the Fisher House.
One in particular family that was coming up from, I believe it was Iowa, and they their son had been so severely injured that he was unable to communicate. And the first time I met him, he was in a wheelchair, and he was just kind of like in a daze, just out of it. And a year later, when they were getting ready, the mother was getting ready to go back home, she said, "Marge, I've got somebody for you to meet." And I said, "Well, who is it?" She says, "Just come here." And so I went to the doorway, and as I was coming to the doorway, in walked her son. And he said, "Hi, Marge, I'm Joe." And it was just the most heartwarming experience. And we actually had a cry. It was really very heartwarming and very rewarding, you know, for all of us.
General Marge Oslin loves her job and takes good care of the families and patients receiving medical care at the VA hospital. And they were recently the first to receive a second Fisher House. We've got some pretty good facilities here in Twin Cities, don't we?
We've got some great facilities. And I would tell you that facilities like the Fisher House are tremendously important. When you talk about a family member, a husband, a son, a daughter, being wounded in combat, I'm trying to imagine anything much more traumatic than that they have to endure, and they need a place where they can be with their soldier, where they can be comfortable, where they can get some rest, where they can feel at home, not only to help their soldier heal, but for them to heal as a family. The Fisher House people are among my heroes because they get to the heart of the matter, which is it's not just the soldier. It's a soldier and his family that we have to take care of because they're all suffering from whatever wounds have been received.
In general, I've said this on the show a number of times, but when we send our troops off to war, they come back changed. And one of the interesting interviews that we had was with Dr. Melissa Pelusny from the VA, and she was instrumental in putting together the RINGS Project, which is the Resilience and National Guard Soldiers Project, and they did a big study on the longest deployment of the 1st Brigade Combat Team, and they're doing a follow-up study on the current 1st Brigade Team, and here's what she had to tell us.
Military service members, the National Guard soldiers in the 1st Brigade, really can respond to war zone experiences in a range of different ways. So when soldiers first come back from a combat situation, some might feel nervous, keyed up. They might be having what we call combat stress reactions. So they might be having thoughts about their combat experiences when they don't want to. They might feel like they're sometimes back in that situation. And for most soldiers, those are sort of normal reactions that on their own, over time, naturally, they recover from. A small percentage of soldiers continue to experience these combat stress reactions, and for some, they can persist and become post-traumatic stress disorder or PTSD. And what we found in the RING study was about 7% of soldiers developed PTSD when they returned back.
For our listeners, if you would like to hear more about that RINGS project study, just go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com and hit search and put in RINGS, and you can listen to the entire interview. General, Dr. Pelusny went on to tell us that one of the things that can affect whether or not you suffer from things like PTSD is conditions back home. Is everything stable here? Is your family taken care of? And what she reported to us was that if their families are taken care of while the troops are overseas in a war zone, there's a less of a chance that they might suffer from PTSD. I think that's some pretty valuable information.
It's incredibly valuable information. You know, I agree with what you said, that combat deployments are life-changing, life-shaping events. And this is another example of where you really don't know what you don't know. This was the Iraq and Afghan conflicts were the first major deployments of National Guard and Reserve troops since World War II. So none of us, none of the leadership or the system had a lot of experience with it. You've heard me say before that it of the three things that a soldier needs to understand about what's going on, maybe the most important is to know that his or her family is being taken care of. Because you have to have that peace of mind so you can focus, and you just need to know in your heart that, that everybody back home is safe.
In general, we talk about, we feature a new entity that helps with that project on almost every show, because we talk about the Yellow Ribbon communities, serving our troops, tee it up for the troops, the Minnesota Military Family Foundation. Every week we talk about how Minnesotans are getting together to help support the troops and their families, and those efforts are proven by the Ring Study to be very valuable.
Minnesota is blessed with a whole basket of resources that are here to help support support our military families, particularly as they make that adjustment to coming home.
General, in the Minnesota National Guard, there's a position called the State Command Sergeant Major. Can you tell us what is that position?
Well, the State Command Sergeant Major is the Adjutant General's senior enlisted leader. He is his right-hand man, or as we'll find out here shortly, woman, that advises him on the on what's going on in the mines and what are the needs of the troopers. And absolutely critical partner to any commander is his top non-commissioned officer, his top sergeant, and that's in the case of State Command Sergeant Major. He is that right-hand man for the Adjutant General.
And General, we recently had the privilege of having the outgoing or retiring Command Sergeant Major Edward Mills, Scott Mills, on the show, along with the incoming Sergeant Major Cindy Kahlberg. And when we talked to Sergeant Mills, we had a fun conversation.
I'm preparing for retirement after 26 years of service with the organization, and I'm very excited to be able to spend some more time with my family, who's endured quite a bit over the course of the last 26 years. So I'm very excited to be able to spend more time with them. I will miss the soldiers and airmen of this organization, but it's a great opportunity and an opportune time for me to depart.
So State Command Sergeant Majors don't go straight from their desk to the old soldiers' home?
No.
I
hope not.
What's in your future, Sergeant Major?
Well, I'm looking at a couple of potential job opportunities out there.
General, I know that you retired in the last year, and this Command Sergeant Major was gentle to me. He didn't do anything to me for suggesting that they call the wagon and haul him over to the old soldiers' home, but does he have a reserved room right across from your reserved room, General?
Well, nothing would make me happier. Tom, I've known Scott Mills since he was a corporal and I was a captain. So if someday in the future we can be sitting side by each and rocking chairs on the front porch of the old soldier's home, it would be just fine by me, and it'd be great.
I can see that now. Sergeant Major, get us some coffee. And off they go. General, we have to take a short break. When we come back, we'll meet the new Sergeant Major, Cindy Kahlberg. This is our special anniversary edition of the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130.
This is Lieutenant Melanie Nelson from Beyond the Yellow Ribbon. Thank you for tuning in over the last year and spreading the word about the show. I look forward to answering your mail call questions. To submit one, visit MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com.
Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, for our special anniversary show. And I've been joined today, it's my pleasure to have been joined today, by retired Brigadier General Joe Kelly. General Kelly, we have a message now from one of your friends. It's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Here's Commissioner Larry Shelido.
Veterans Day is a time of honor, thanks, and celebrate all of the outstanding men and women who served and continue to serve this country. This year, on 11-11-11, I invite you to join us for the State of Minnesota official Veterans Day program. Veterans Day in America can be defined in one word, freedom. And freedom will always be defined by the courage of its defenders. This year's event, honoring all veterans, will be held at the Invergrove Heights Armory at 10 a.m. For more information, visit minnesotaveteran.org.
Thank you, Commissioner Shelido. For more information, please go to minnesotamilitaryradiohour.com. General, do you remember Commissioner Shelledo?
There's absolutely no way I could forget Commissioner General Shelledo. He's a great man. It's great to hear his voice, and he's doing a tremendous job as the commissioner. He spent so many years walking in a soldier's boots that I can't think anybody better qualified to take care of the veterans than Commissioner Shelledo.
7 years commanding the Minnesota National Guard, and now he's taking care of all the veterans of Minnesota.
Absolutely.
General, before we went to the break, we heard from retiring Command Sergeant Major Scott Mills, and we also that day interviewed incoming Sergeant Major Cindy Kahlberg, and here's what she had to say.
I know I have some big shoes to fill, Major Mills. I've worked with him for a long time, and I understand his caliber of Sergeant Major. I'm honored to be representing the soldiers and the airmen of the Minnesota National Guard, and obviously I look forward to getting on board and getting out to visit each of the units in the near future.
General, that's our first female senior enlisted advisor to the Adjutant General. How about that?
Well, that is a historic thing. I think it's a great thing, not only for Minnesota, but certainly for the soldiers and airmen that fill the ranks of the Minnesota National Guard. I'm just reminded when I hear Command Sergeant Major Kahlberg talking that the military is a living, breathing thing, and we're constantly changing leaders, and it reminds me how deep we are. Somebody like Scott Mills to be replaced is a tall order, but we're so deep in the talent of our soldiers that someone like Sergeant Major Kahlberg will step right up. I just want to congratulate her and wish her all the best. She's got a big job. There's lots of challenges ahead, but I'm sure General Nash appointed someone for a position of that importance that he's got supreme confidence in.
And it's nice to know there are great opportunities for our young men and women in the military today, isn't it, sir?
It really is. One of the things that I enjoyed the most over my 30-plus years in the armed forces was to watch the growth of our women soldiers and how they assume more and more of a role.
General, in year two, the Command Sergeant Major Kahlberg is going to join us on a regular basis. And towards the second half of the first year, we had the pleasure of getting Doug Bly from the Minnesota Patriot Guard to join us once a month to give us an update on the Patriot Guard riders. And I know they have you have a warm spot in your heart for them, don't you?
One of my favorite groups. And the thing that's funny about the Patriot Guard is they have no idea the impact, the positive, emotional, warming impact that organization has on our troopers when they leave and when they come home. They just don't know how good they are and how important they are to us.
Fabulous organization, and having experienced their mission with a family member of mine that was a veteran that died, it really comes home, and they do a fabulous job. General, coming up on the show this year, another regular guest is a holy man and a great character. It's a chaplain, Captain Chaplain Vince Hokanen. We've had him on the show a few times. He's going to be with us on the Thanksgiving and Christmas shows. As well as both of those shows, we're going to talk to the 1st Brigade Combat Team over in Kuwait. And as you recall, we had Chaplain Hokanen on the Memorial Day show, and he did a great job for us, and he had a message that day that I'd like to play now.
Today we want to honor and memorialize those that have given their lives, who've prepared our nation for the prosperity that we see and that we experience today. And we want to honor those that have given their lives and the families that have sacrificed so much for the course of freedom and fighting for our justice. And we thank God for these things that he's given to us. And I wanted to offer a prayer. Heavenly Father, as we consider this Memorial Day, we want to recognize those soldiers and families that have gone before us and have given their lives in defense of our great nation. We honor their memory and sacrifice and thank you for their dedication and commitment to all Americans. We ask for strength for each day those who are serving abroad and for their families to help them endure the rigors of separation. Help us who are in the military here back home to do all we can to support our military families. We think of the millions of veterans out there who have fought in past wars and who have served their country faithfully, and ask you to bless them with health and prosper their futures. Help all of us to never forget the sacrifices our fighting men and women have paid on our behalf. Help us sense your presence each and every day as we continue to enjoy the freedoms our veterans have bought for us with their sacrifices and even their lives. God bless America. In your name I pray.
General, we've got a fabulous chaplain's corps in the state of Minnesota, and they take care of the troops and their families. They do a marvelous job, don't they?
All I can say to that is amen, Tom. And I remember Chaplain Hokanen when he was first appointed, and although he was a a qualified religious man. He didn't know much about soldiering, and to see how he has grown is really tremendous.
General, we've got some really exciting things coming up. We're going to have the operational mentoring liaison team up on a show soon, and this station, Clear Channel and Twin Cities News Talk AM 1130, has given us a tremendous amount of support this year, and they've told us that we'll be on the air for 3 hours again on Memorial Day for a Memorial Day show. And finally, we have to announce that next week we have a very special show, because we'll be on the road live from Kuwait with Colonel Eric Kurska and the 1st Brigade Combat Team. Any advice for me on this trip, sir?
Follow Colonel Kurska's lead, and more than advice, I got a request, and that's just please pass on all my best greetings and appreciation for those guys. I got a lot of friends over there in the 1st Brigade Combat Team.
General, we're almost out of time. Any final thoughts for our listeners today? And thank you so much for joining us on this one-year anniversary show.
Tom, thanks for having me back. I really enjoyed it. You once said to me that, you know, generals don't retire. They just change clothes and continue to serve in a different role. And apparently that's true of Air Force Staff Sergeants as well, because Tom Lyons continues to serve everybody in uniform and this country in many, many ways. And this radio program that has been such a success over its first year is just one example of that. So I just want to say thank you and congratulations. One of the important things that this program does is it keeps our servicemen and women and their families from receding too far back into the shadows, and it keeps them foremost in the minds of their fellow citizens. And that's a great service, and for that I thank you.
General, it's been my pleasure as an aging Vietnam veteran to be able to do something to help support today's troops and their families. And I'd like to once again thank the Minnesota National Guard, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, for allowing us to put this on the air and bring all this good information to our listeners week after week. We think year two is going to be even more exciting than year one. We're just about out of time. Please, General, thanks for joining us again today. Please join us next week, live from Kuwait, with the 1st Brigade Combat Team, 34th Infantry Division, Red Bulls. That's next Sunday morning at 7, right here on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
You've been listening to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour with host Tom Lyons. Tom is the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm located in Minneapolis. He's also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force. We hope you found this program to be informative and entertaining. This has been a production of Clear Channel, MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com, the Minnesota National Guard, BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org, and the Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs. Podcasts of this program are available at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Thanks for listening.